Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. With this beautiful reminder, we enter practice. We meditate a little bit. It is this funny way of practicing where we say, now I meditate, and then the instructions say, don't meditate. This kind of practice. For some people at the end of the day, the clinging to thoughts is already a little bit exhausted. So not reflecting about the past, not anticipating the future, not thinking about the present, not analyzing, not meditating, all that comes in quite handy at the end of the day, for some people. At some times. But when you reflect about the nature of samsara, then actually one should be so tired of samsara. It's more than one day. It's been long. It's been long that we were in those mechanisms. So let's enter together for a while into that simple presence, wary of our samsaric propensities. Not engaging in them. Because in obvious and subtle ways, they lead to dukkha, to stress. Maybe you don't know this word readiness that I was using. Huh? It means to be fed up. This you understand? Yes, fed up. Too much. And yes, part of my being here was also to help you enjoy life, to find taste for life even under difficult situations. But I should talk to you about renunciation and readiness, you know? Often people don't like to hear about it. I mean, if I talk in like Western Europe, renunciation is like, wow, sounds very much like giving up what I like. You know, not being allowed to enjoy. But wariness is a form of wisdom, and renunciation as well. We are talking about a form of wisdom that you will need when you go back home, even more than here in retreat. And how would you translate readiness? Tired. Yes, tired. Tired and almost vomiting. Yeah. The monastery where Geno Rinpoche grew up, he grew up with his family as a nomad, but then when he came to the monastery was called Chodrak, the Rock of Weariness. Some translators even use disgust. As a name for a monastery, quite a strong word, huh? It's quite a strong, but this is fed up with samsara. Now, what is samsara? We can hide behind that word. If we don't explain it, it's useless. We are samsara. Fed up with my tendencies to always take myself so important. To cling to everything that presents itself, including aversion. Fed up with the complications that I produce. Fed up with searching happiness again and again in cookies, chocolates, distractions, films, you know, a phone call here, the WhatsApp there, no, 10 WhatsApp there and one phone call there. And you have to do it long enough to get fed up. You know that the young Tibetans, you know, the generation of those who were the refugees in 1959, they came over from Tibet. Some of them managed to cross the mountains. They were devoted Dharma practitioners. The generation afterwards, they love everything that comes from the West and that is a sign of material wealth and so on. And they only go into the monastery until they have a nice girl, a nice boy, and then they leave the monastery. It's just a nice place for education. It's very hard to find an old Tibetan monk. You know, there are some, but usually there's a lot, and this is because they are not weary. It's because they are fascinated. Now, with you, I think we have a good chance that you are not fascinated anymore. I think with much of what is going on in this world, you are really fed up. And now take this as a starting point to simplify your life, to not engage further in complications, to make it simpler. And this is why you have been come to retreat. I mean, you are doing it. This is the proof. You're here. So you're already on that track. But when you come home, don't lose it. It's not that at home we continue in retreat. This is kind of giving a slap into the face of life. This is not what we are doing. Because there are different demands and we have to be open to them. We have to be, to really take care of our responsibilities, sure. Very important. And then a yogi is not only a yogi in retreat. A yogi is also, and a yogini is also a yogini when coming home. This doesn't stop. Otherwise, one has to laugh about this term yogi and yogini that you're using here in Tovana. It is not true. Yogis and yoginis, you cannot be for 10 days. It's not possible. It's an attitude for one's whole life. It's a life attitude. It's because you've gotten a taste of the Dharma and you have a yoga, which is, now in our context, we can call it, because that's the official term, Mahamudra Yoga, the yoga of Mahamudra. Yes. Tibetan Naljo is the direct translation of yoga. And that's our practice. Or Vipassana as a term for your yoga. You know, whatever you call your practice of the path of liberation, that's the yoga. Okay? Now, we are yoginis and yogins. If this is really the top priority in our life, we might spend more time with other things because we are obliged to. But we transform everything that we do, what we spend the time with, we make that into our yoga. Okay? So if you're an accountant, typing along on your computer, bookkeeping, make that into your yoga. Make that into your practice. Whatever you are doing, don't leave the yoga outside. The yoga is not reserved to the practice in the morning and in the evening. This is only the formal frame. This is the training ground for the informal yoga of everyday life. A yogi and a yogini, they are practitioners all around the clock. We never stop. We never stop. Don't ask me how much you should practice. Your whole life, 24 hours, 24/7, okay? All around, all the time. And you understand then why this yoga has to be relaxed? If it is not reserved for a few hours here and there and an occasional retreat, but if it is one's whole life, it has to fit. It has to be a yoga that we can do all the time. This is interesting, isn't it? It's a perspective. I hope it is not new to you. If it is new, it might be shocking. Yes. Make it, you know, in the words of the tradition that probably what is most taught here, then make sati, which is the essential ingredient of the yogi, of the yoga, the quality of awareness directed towards what is liberating, directed towards what is most helpful. This makes sati the center of your yoga. Okay? I think the word sati is probably used here in the teachings. Huh? It's probably one of the most current terms. And this reminding oneself of what is most important, this goes along with the meaning of life that I have explained in the last teaching. So always staying close, all the time staying close to what really inspires you. All the time. All around the clock. This is the quickest way to happiness and liberation. Stay close to what is really inspiring to you, and you will be happy when? Right now, you got it. Right now, all the time. Yes. And this is how a yogi and a yogini are happy. Because their sati dwells, their awareness dwells in what is the real purpose of life for them. So be clear, what is your yoga when you go home? I'm not talking about just asanas, you know, body posture, call it sitting on the cushion or something. Not even, the old word yoga, you know, that Patanjali, who probably lived in the second century after Christ, then he also developed an eightfold path. And the eightfold path of Patanjali, you can study it, is very similar to the Buddha's path. Just he condenses the elements of right livelihood, right speech, He condensed them a little bit and made more space for asanas and pranayama to include that. Yeah? Pranayama is the art of working with your energies. Okay? So he included the practice of asana, which is to work with one's body and the subtle energies, and the rest is the same. The rest is absolutely the same. This is where the word yoga really nowadays gets its meaning from. Nobody knows Patanjali. He has had no devotees. No one knows who he was. You know, he disappeared, and everyone claims that I'm in the tradition of Patanjali. But there is no tradition of Patanjali. It is just that we have the text, okay? And four chapters and so on. But the word yoga comes from there, comes from the Hindu tradition. And it has, of course, been there before the Buddha. He was a yogi, a special one. So we practice a yoga of which we are being told that sati is the core, the one path. You know, that one ingredient without which nothing works. So this sati, and by the way, you also find it with Patanjali. Huh? He kept that. And this is this sati which leads to samadhi and which leads to understanding. Yes? And the whole thing reinforces each other. Now, actually, the yoga, the traditional way you would define the yoga of someone on the path to liberation, you would say, yeah, it's the Eightfold Noble Path. That's my yoga. This is the more precise description of my yoga. So when we come home and we are all around the clock yoginis, then we establish a good basis of ethics, which is on the basis of the right motivation, the second element of the Eightfold Noble Path, and which is already an expression of the view of that we are all interconnected and that harm done to one affects everybody happiness of one affects everybody. So this, there's a view there which nourishes the wholesome motivation, which nourishes the ethical conduct, yeah, which is the basis for meditation, for going into the depths of, you know, our clarity, our presence, until it becomes really precise and is able to see and understand the nature of reality, which is then the understanding that nourishes the view again, which makes the motivation to share this with all sentient beings even bigger, because the more understanding there is, the more we are clear that we have a medicine to share with all those who are also sick. Many are sick, if not all, but not all are weary. Okay? Not all are fed up. Some love their complications. Yes, and if you want to share the medicine with them, they'd say, no, I don't need medicine, I'm not sick, everything is fine. You know, I have a party every day if I want, every night, or at least every weekend, and I have my beer, I have my whatever, yes? Things are okay for me. For a yogi and yogini, this means, okay, this is maybe not quite the right company. Okay, this is not where I find sangha. So a yogi and a yogini, like in the old times, they go to places where they find other yogis and yoginis, so that they can exchange. Now, at least we have the internet nowadays, so we can have forums, we can discuss even at a distance, we can keep the contact, we can log into platforms and listen to inspiring contributions of the Sangha. And this is part of what yogis and yoginis do. The yogis and yoginis from which the Mahamudra tradition comes, they lived on the charnel grounds. These were the burial grounds, not burial, the cremation grounds of the Indian tradition. During the day, they performed the necessary rites for the people who brought the dead corpses. And as soon as the fires were taken care of and so on, then they did their practice. Very much at night also, they practiced all around the clock. Mahamudra practitioners, they lived together with the Hindu yogis. And that's why in Mahamudra, we have a lot of techniques, you know, there has been an exchange of these asanas, and we have a lot of pranayama techniques, we have visualizations, and sometimes you don't know, is this Shaivite or Shiva tradition, is this Buddhist tradition, there are so many crossovers. And they have learned, you know, it has become more and more also a non-dual approach in the sense of not the Atman Brahman non-duality, but the non-duality of subject-object that we are talking about. There have been a lot of cross-exchanges. Anyhow, why do I say that? I'm going around this word yoga and yogi, yogini. I want to inspire you to be city yogis. I would love you. I mean, most of you probably, you live in one of the cities. And even if you're a village, then you're a village yogi, yogini. It's fine. Yeah? Or you're a beach yogi or whatever. You do, you know, wherever you are. But please practice and don't ask how much should I practice. If you can't practice much formally on a cushion, nevertheless, you can make your whole day a practice. And when you try that, you will see that you fail all the time. Yes. And you will say, after trying it 3 days, impossible. No, you try too short. Try your whole life. Yes, don't give up. You will get better. And you will need practice times. You will see that you actually need them, and you will become thirsty for them, hungry. And you will grab the practice times as soon as they present themselves to you. You will not let them be, you know, eaten up by other activities, because you're wary of samsara, you want to become free, and you don't let useless activities like this useless chatter with people talking about others who are not there, for example, or films they have seen, or discussing politics and all of that. You know, you won't let this, how did you say, social what? Social media, yeah. You won't let that eat up your precious life. Too precious. You have had enough of it. I think you have tried it. You know how much it helps. You take only the part which helps. Only that. Phew, this is a yoga. To only use the computer what is helpful. That's quite a yoga. Wow. To only use the smartphone for what is helpful. Wow. Here we have the challenges of nowadays. But it's the same challenge as when before the yogis and yoginis visited each other for a cup of tea. And then to know when the conversation is finished and to go back to practice instead of staying together and a beady, a weedy, you know, whatever you call it. Yes? Yeah, I learned this. I learned this on the beach here on Lake Tiberias. Yes, a weedy. So, you have to know the times to stop. When you did what you wanted to do, and no more. This is wisdom. Okay? It's wisdom and it's compassion. This readiness, this fed up, is actually a clear sign of wisdom. And then to do what this readiness tells you, and to cut with all those distractions and all these complications, you know, this is wisdom and it's another act of compassion. So to simplify our life is the best thing we can do. One thing less is always one thing less to take care of. We always have this idea when we buy something new that it will stay new and that it is not a problem. It won't. It takes space, we have to store it, then we try it, and then we see, oh, it has a little, my spaghetti sauce. Yes, and then we have to wash it, and then it doesn't get out, and then, you know, all of that, you know, complexities everywhere. It's already nice if you only have one smartphone. It's already nice. If you only have one phone, many have several to take care of. It's already nice if you have one bank account only, but most have several to take care of. Then you have so many followers, maybe on your LinkedIn or wherever you are. Yes? Hey, you take care of your social media? Yes, you want to take care of. How many extra things have come into your life? Wow. Someone, you know, the worst is you already have a car and someone offers you another one. Then you have two cars. Another one to take care of. Simplify one thing of that which you need. And for your clothes, only as much as fits into a small cupboard, right? Make it simple. Make your life simple. You know, to stand in your cupboard and to look left and right and you don't know what to put on, and save that time. Yes, you know, it's precious. be simple. That means at the same time that you look pretty much the same every day. And I know some of you are doing that, and it's great. Do it. Do it. Don't try to look special. You know, it makes life so simple. I mean, I'm very happy to see that you are like this, that many of you, all of you are doing like this. It's wonderful. So continue when you go home. It's not only for retreat. Retreat, I don't know the Sanskrit word, but the Tibetan word is tsam for retreat. And this is to establish boundaries. It means that I don't cross a line. And this line is I don't go into distraction. I stay in that space of no distraction. And that's the yoga. So one can claim that one goes home and one is in retreat at home, but that means that at home one does what is necessary and one does not engage in distraction. One is not making life more complicated. And this you can do. I mean, I don't know Israeli society, I really don't know. I'm getting to know. But my suspicion is that it is not so different from the way we live. I mean, outwardly, politically, yes, but probably if we look into the rooms of children, we find 95% useless toys. Yes, that's our world nowadays. And this, it starts so early. Accumulation. And when you are young, parent, you know, you get everyone is offering you, and it's difficult to say no, and suddenly you finish up, you need another room for the toys and one for your kid. It's like this. I mean, I'm of course exaggerating to some extent, but you even say no, because I do know families like this, and it is simple. Okay, simple. Always more simple. It's such a joy. I live in a room of 16 square meters, 16, 4x4, and everything is in there. Okay? Except my three bicycles. Okay. I admit. One for trekking, one for the mountains, and one to go long distances with a motor, right? But okay, it's my. Yes, we have such sites, okay. But all of them are used. They are more than 10 years old. You know, I'm not replacing them like other nerds, you know. I'm not replacing them all the time. You know? So take care of that. Use the things to the end. Make your life simple. Don't be always, you know, best informed, top of the whatever. No need. Make it simple. Make it simple. Are you still repairing your clothes? Sometimes to put a button, you know, to sew on a button and so on. Wonderful. I do it as well. Let's keep that practice. It's part of our yoga. Okay? Let's not just throw things. Yes? Okay. How to... Yes. Yes, because there's so many zippers now everywhere, right? So, yes, and there are the how do you say, the scratch, the scotch or whatever, yeah? And so on, yeah, to make life more easy. So, taking the yoga of practice at home is a decision about how I want to live my life. And it's not always that funny as when we talk about it, because with the change of attitude, you might lose friends. You might lose people which were dear to you, but their way of dealing with life and looking at life just is so opposite. And with the time as a yogi, yogini, yes, there's also a letting go of contacts of dear friends that are actually enjoying complications. They're not wary. They're not in the process of simplifying. And the good news is that by not spending that much time with them, there is time to meet others of the same kind, the Sangha, the closer Sangha. We never kick anyone out of our heart. We are always there. And when our old friends want to see us and exchange with us, we are there. Okay. But we don't need to follow every invitation. We don't need to keep on these threads of communication all the time if there is no deeper meaning to it. I really want to encourage you. I know what I'm talking about. I've met many people in my life, and of course not so many have stayed. Yes? It is very sad when your best friend from school times, with whom I spent all the time, even moving into the Dharma, we were still together, you know? But then when you notice going different ways, going different ways. The most interesting thing about what you could tell me about Israel was, oh, you know, there is a beach for homosexuals and there is an app where you can see who is the homosexual closest to you, and with that app you can find him and start talking with him. That was most interesting. Yes? So, not really my world. Not because of homosexuality. He was already my best friend being homosexual. That was already in our school times. That's not the issue. But what is interesting are not really the bars of Tel Aviv, okay? It's not really, yes, and it's sad because we were really close. We did everything together. We slept in one sleeping bag. We traveled together. When I lost my clothes in a truck, we were hitchhiking, then we had one sweater and one pair of trousers. So one of us was wearing the sweater and the other one was wearing the trousers. And since I lost my sleeping bag, we spread one sleeping bag to sleep both under that. And we had always to turn at the same time. It was in Mexico and Guatemala, okay, warm climate. But then in Guatemala we could buy some extra clothes and then it was a little bit easier. But you know, this kind of really close friends. I mean, I hope you know what I'm talking about. And then it's a little bit difficult to see that the path is going in different directions. And then we need courage. A yogi, yogini needs courage to go the path of liberation, to go the path of practice, of awakening. It's not by staying ordinary that we will reach there. In a way, although we try our best, we become a little bit outsiders. A little bit, you know? It's not really, we are not mainstream society, and we will never be. It's not, we can function in the world very well. We can be mainstream in our job, you know, we can be in there. But even when we do our job, people will see that we are doing it differently. We are just a little different. And in a good way. So I want to encourage you to have that self-care that really good taking care of yourself, which allows you to continue your practice around the clock. All around the clock. You know, it also happens to me sometimes that I would like to stay in bed longer because, you know, sometimes it's cold outside. And it's nice and cozy. And since I don't want to get up, my trick is I roll out of the bed. I roll under the blanket until I'm on the floor. That makes me laugh every time. But then I'm already happy to get up because it's a trick. I don't like this movement of lifting the blanket. You see, this rolling out is a different movement. And I know it's part of my yoga to trick myself into getting up when I'm awake. The agreement with my teacher was, you get up when you have the first clear thought. When you notice that you're awake, that's the moment to get up. Don't pretend you're still sleeping. You saw. Okay, so this is the agreement. And then I have two ways of getting up. One is the rolling out. The other is to sit up in bed with the blanket and then to start practice sitting in bed, which is also a good way to do it. The practice has started and the first thing is always the refuge. Always. Directly going for refuge. And I've been doing this yes, definitely for more than 40 years. Yes, definitely. So, always, first thing, remembering the yoga. That's what the refuge is about, remembering the yoga. So, remembering what is the purpose of my life. First thing, there's the first thought of waking up, you know, oh, you realize, oh, I'm awake. And then you can say, Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. And I do this usually when I'm still lying, because it comes immediately. So I do mostly in Tibetan. I do my Four Lines of Refuge prayer, which I've become so habituated to, and I understand the meaning. So that has become a habit. It's a good habit. Because waking up like this in the morning, there's the yoga of waking up and remembering the past and makes all the rest easier. And it's a good preparation for when you wake up after leaving this body. When you wake up in the bardo, so in this intermediate state, when you come back to consciousness, it's like coming back from sleep. Now, if you have developed that habit of immediately remembering your yoga, of immediately remembering your practice and not dwelling in whatever could go on in mind, then you're safe on the other side. You will immediately start your practice. So the way to get up in the morning is actually linked to the way we will come back to consciousness after having left this body. And I think you know enough of the teachings about, you know, what happens after leaving this body. These are very crucial moments, you know. It's very important to have a yoga than to be able to deal with that mind that comes back to consciousness and then accelerates, then becomes quicker and want more impressions, like in the dream world. Yes? So to remember the yoga at that time is already a good start, like it is a good start for the day. And to go to bed, what we will hopefully do soon, is the yoga of preparing to die. It's the yoga of preparing for our last conscious breath. So that is also a daily yoga. Yeah, yeah. What do you want? So there is a daily yoga of saying goodbye to this day, to this, you know, to this day of being conscious, of being present, of having practiced. Can be moments of gratitude. And usually what we do in the Tibetan tradition is this blue Buddha that I was talking about, this blue Buddha comes into our heart and settles there for the night. It is dark blue in that sense, because then it doesn't disturb sleep. Yeah, it's like, it's not bright white, it is dark blue. Yes? So it helps. And then from this dark blue Buddha, as you fall asleep, just these last moments of consciousness, there is dark blue light filling your whole body, filling your whole room, going to all living beings and touching all of them and wishing them to be happy. So the step-by-step process is really one's own body, one's room, the whole house, then the whole of Tovana, then the whole kibbutz, then going to the villages around. I only know Mount Tabor, but it's like everything around, the whole area. Is it called Galilee here, or what is it called? Yes? Yes, like this, yes. And then you go further, and you have no limits. There's no limits. The borders between countries and ethnics, they don't exist. The light goes everywhere. It goes to all animals as well. It touches the stones and the plants and the lakes, and it touches all of them. And usually I get lost when I fall asleep when I'm that far. But it could actually come back, the light. It can come back and gather again in your heart, and you enter that simplicity of just being connected with your Buddha nature, of being with simple mind, and in that state you fall asleep. So this is a nice way of connecting with all sentient beings in bodhicitta before passing over into the sleep or leaving this body. And there is a saying, I don't know, maybe it's a Tibetan saying, you don't know what comes first. Next day or next life. Because it's a miracle that during one's whole night, every out-breath is followed by an in-breath. And sometimes it doesn't happen. So that's why we always prepare. Okay, it was a little bit longer now. I didn't think I would talk so long. It's 9:45 now. Let's dedicate. I will sing again the Tibetan dedication. Yes? Oh no, the mantra? Or what? Oh, and I will dedicate to Jonathan, our friend and teacher, who is in hospital. And I dedicate to Hans, who is in hospital and dying, and I dedicate to all of them who are already dead, in the process of dying, sick, and in the process of being born, or not yet born. Okay. Sunam de yin tam jesim panin tam nene pendranam pam jena kengana chimbalam jumpaye simpen sole drawa drawa shu jampen pavunji tankem padang Kanto zampo de yan de shente de da kanje je so da lo jenge wan de da tam jeram tu mu sang ye ko som ne pe jen lam dan che ne men ju de pe jen lam dan Gendun me jedum pejin lam ji jitong o waman lam drum pa shu. Sleep well, and hopefully we meet tomorrow again.